Attention listeners, we're excited to announce that AfterSight will be moving to our new office on March 26th. As we make this transition, our services will be down most of the day. We apologize for any inconvenience, but truly appreciate your understanding as we start this new chapter. Thank you for listening to AfterSight.
You're listening to an AINC original podcast. We believe you don't have to do life without a compass. Let us be your guide on this amazing journey. Welcome to Navigating Life with Vision Loss.
Hello. Thank you for joining us for NLVL. We are in September, my favorite month of the year. I love the fall. And this month, we are talking about fashion. And today's episode is Fashion Confidence, Navigating Style and Blindness. And our guest is going to be Tricia Wechter. So I think you guys will really enjoy the rest of this month as we're talking to Tricia. She's actually going to be able to do our next three episodes. They'll have slightly different topics. But she'll be covering all of those for us. So I'm super excited about that. I personally own a couple of the garments from Blind Girl Designs, her company. So I'm really excited to have her on our podcast. Tricia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tricia, I know you have been diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, and you had a background in the fashion industry for many years before you founded Blind Girl Designs. And I'm always amazed at the things that you're doing and some of the new things now with the 3D ink and things that you're able to do. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about your background and how you went from the career you had in fashion and to creating Blind Girl Designs?
My career in fashion involved flying around the world projecting fashion trends for major U.S. companies. So I have been to all seven continents and 48 countries. And that involved not only going to couture shows, but also climbing through factories, climbing through fabric warehouses in India and Sri Lanka. So for me to learn how to do my job, to be able to talk about trends and how to translate them into the moderate market, required, in my mind, the knowledge of how to construct and build a garment, which I have a degree in theater, and I was taught to sew at the age of five. So that came really natural to me, asking those questions and doing all that due diligence. I was diagnosed with RP around the turn of the century, although I knew there was something wrong with my eyes before that. And I was startled to find out that people could see at night. I didn't know that everybody else could see, you know, because it's a genetic disease, you know, so it comes at different stages in people's lives. And so when I was diagnosed, I was really thrilled to know my diagnosis, despite the fact that it's untreatable, incurable, and progressive. At least I knew what I was dealing with and was able to tell my sisters, of which I have two sisters who have RP, a niece, and my mom has RP as well. So once I got the diagnosis, it did not stop me in my career. In fact, it pushed me further to learn more and to do more in my career. And I did that all the way till about 6 years ago. Let's say about 8 years ago, my vision was at a 20-degree visual field, which is blind. That's what the breakoff is. And 2 years later, it hit about 15 degrees, which for me was a pretty rapid vision loss. And at that point, I could not look at thousands of images a day and jump on planes and fly around the world. And my company got bought up by another company. Their company funding dried up, and I was on a white cane full time, and no one wanted to hire a chief merchandising officer in the fashion industry that had a white cane and it was blind.
That had to be a huge challenge of what you do at that point.
Well, at that point, interestingly, we had gotten a house in Houston, which we thought was for my son, and it's where we live now. And it was, you know, looking back at, you know, the story, of course, tells itself looking backwards. At the time, I was like, what are we doing in Houston instead of New York City? I mean, this is what happened here. But at the same time, I was walking into walls in Houston because I have no visual memory of this house that we're in, right? Everybody drives cars. I've been taking trains and buses and airplanes all over the place. So mobility was never a problem. It's a huge problem in Houston. So I was shocked to realize in real life how little vision I had and how much I was operating on visual memory. And so when that crash happened and I lost my city, my career, my business, you know, friends, when I lost everything, I'm going to say I was laid out flat on the floor, pretty much knocked down on the floor with just massive depression, because there was nothing about me that said, hey, let's just stop now. You know, let's just stop, kick back by the chair, you know, listen to some audiobooks. That's not where I was, you know, in my brain or my career. And I got a psychiatrist and I got a therapist and I got hooked up with ACB in Houston. And slowly but surely, I started being grateful and thankful and finding the silver lining and figuring out to get all of the glass jars out of my kitchen with the tile floor and replace them with plastic. And, you know, I learned how to navigate my house without my white cane. And in the meantime, my friend Dave asked me if I would come consult with him in his factory in Chinatown here. He is one of the first people I hired in New York. And I said, sure. And so I went and helped him with the young designers. And I loved it. It was great. I was able to be in my field. And at one point, one of them asked me to go to their factory to help them with sewing. David said, you can't bring your white cane. And
that's a big difficulty when that is how you navigate and know it's in front of you.
Correct. But at the time, I was like, that is a kind of a weird request. Let me kind of think about that. And then I brought my white cane with me, of course, because it's everywhere. But right before we went into the factory, I left it in the car. And you know what? It's a really good thing that I did, really, now that I'm a little farther along on the journey. Because when we went in the factory, of course, I was completely stuck at one place. I could not be part of the conversation, and I couldn't give any advice on how to help them with the sewing. And by the time the meeting was over, I had gone from being a really well-seasoned veteran of the fashion industry to a lump in the corner because of my white cane. And I just became more and more and more infuriated at the notion that where I perceived the white cane as my ticket to freedom, and it had been for years since 2010 when I started using one, I was like so incredibly grateful for the white cane because it enabled me to continue my career, fly all over the world, go to theaters in the dark. And I had never had this bizarre perception. So I just gently told Dave that I would not be, you know, I was going to go in a different direction. And so the different direction was me really thinking about if I could possibly work with anyone else, because who will understand this? And I came up with nobody will understand this, right? How much visual memory we have and what we can do as blind people. It's just not comprehensible to other people. And so I just one morning got up, literally hit my feet hit the floor, and I said, I'm going to start a company. It's going to be called Blind Girl Designs. And I am telling everybody that I am blind. And I am going to kill it. And I did.
You did.
That's how I did. And so that, because I used all the skills that I had earned during all my decades of being in the fashion business and learning all aspects of the industry. And I put them all to work for me on behalf of my company and the blind community. And yeah, that's really yeah. the deal.
Well, your designs are great. As I said, I have a couple myself, and I have an eye on one or two more. I think I might just must have. Tell us how your brand caters to individuals who are blind or low vision, where you've incorporated like tactile elements or things being easy to wear.
Yes.
And some of those things. And yet yes. they're very That's fashion forward.
Yes. So one of the big things is that it has to be cool. There has to be a cool factor. If it's not cool, we're not going to do it. And cool is what my job was, to identify mm-hmm. cool, right? So when I did my company, I did it based on what my needs were, right? So I'm not great with buttons or mm-hmm. matching buttons all the way up. So all of our cardigans and dresses do not have buttons or zippers on them, anything where you have to match. So I know that you have a great cardigan. So, you know, you just throw it on. There's just two arms and two big patch pockets. Everything has pockets in it. That's a garment, whether it's a dress or a cardigan. And on the t-shirts and hoodies and zip hoodies and tote bag, the tote bags all have zippers, two zipper pockets actually. And all of the hoodies and all the prints are all pull over your head, really easy to manage. The other thing that I used to do was wear my clothes inside out. Now, this maybe you are like really have it together and you never wore anything.
I can see and I have done that.
But I did. Okay. I have done it. And in fact, had people say, do you know that's yep. inside out? I mean, like halfway through the day. And so by having tactile prints, by having openings on stuff, then mm-hmm. you know what the front is automatically. But having tactile prints on stuff, we can just feel the front of the t-shirt. And we know what the front of the garment is, and we know that's mm-hmm. the outside of the t-shirt. So I can, you know, I have some sight and bright light, but I can be in pitch dark, pull a t-shirt, feel it, and know that I'm going to put it on frontwards. And I just feel like that is just removing an obstacle. So if we do it, does it remove an obstacle or create an obstacle? If it creates an obstacle, mm-hmm. then we don't do it. If it removes an obstacle, then we do. And then in terms of who it appeals to, there's a wide range of vision in the blind community, from low vision to totally blind. And so we try to appeal to that entire spectrum. I have some customers who will only buy my 3D tactile puff print ink, where they can read the braille and feel everything on the mm-hmm. print by hand and read it and understand it. And then I have a lot of other customers who are like, I love Christmas. Yes. I want to see the sparkly stars. I want to, you know? And so, so we also do, and we discovered that generally within the blind community, bright colors are best perceived. So the color tones of the inks that we use are very clean and vibrant, so that anybody that has any vision left can pick up the flick of the red or the orange or the yellow. That's generally the last color that goes, I find, within the blind community. So we are very specific about our colors, and sometimes have our ink guys review our colors to make sure that the tones are really, mm-hmm. really true. And then we now have the option to combine both the puff ink and the vinyl ink. And so we do that as well. Yes, we do that as well. So we try, and we're appealing to, you know, men and women. So we design men's prints. If we don't have enough, my son will say, looking a little girly there, mom, to remind me to, you know, to design some more, you know, guy prints. And we are able to print our ink on, starting with youth small, and we print all the way up to 3XL tall. So there's a whole nother aspect of accessibility, which is mm-hmm. size. Size is a big block for anybody who's a 3X to 5X or that's a 3X tall. You know, and especially within our community, where I want to be able to help everybody look really great, I don't want a tall 6'3" guy wearing a Blind Girl Design t-shirt that won't go right. to the top of his jeans. So I want to make it accessible and make sure it fits properly, yeah, and they feel comfortable in it. So those are challenges.
And,
that we
and
have.
Then that's good for everybody. Well, and you're including children, you know, in your design and the importance of considering the importance of having children included in accessible fashion.
So that's really a good topic. And one thing that's really interesting that I think is kind of odd, actually, when children are little, whether they're sighted or blind, a lot of clothing is tactile. There's a lot of embroidery and patches and plastic stuff stuck on it and embossing, right? So it's tactile. So if you're a little child, you can actually identify your your apparel without sight. And then you get to be about 5 or 6 and the clothing changes and becomes smaller versions of adult clothing. So although we do the Christmas prints in all the way down to 6 months for onesies, for all the Christmas stuff, our regular product, we start with youth size small, which is about age 5 and up. And I think that being able to celebrate being part of the blind community at a young age and being able to identify, see something that reflects you, which is either Braille or a white cane or a paw print for a guide dog print, I feel like is so healing and healthy for all of us because we're all included in this extraordinarily supportive community. And as we can make sure that all of our children feel and know that they're included and loved and that there's loads of people that will help guide them along the way, I feel like that's a really, really important message to send to children.
Yeah, I agree. And just generally thinking of not only children, but as they get older, feeling like you can be confident and dressing confidently. And that's important for everybody, including individuals who are blind and low vision. And some people might think, well, if I don't see what I'm wearing, you know, do I care? Does that person care what they're wearing if they can't see it? Well, yes. Yes, they do. So, So why is it important? And because I think Blind Girl Designs really, that's part of your, you know, core values is to have things that people can feel very confident in and look their best in.
Yes. So there's multiple things that we do. Like when we're at a show and we're fitting people, I always fit everyone and my team does based on their shoulders. So if you buy a t-shirt or a cardigan or a dress from us, we're going to fit you from the shoulders because t-shirts don't have side seams. And if you're a little rounder in the midsection, regardless if you're a man or a woman, it doesn't really matter because the cotton will stretch and there are no seams to tear. But if your shoulder is fitted, you will automatically look neat. If your shoulder is dropped halfway down your arm, you will automatically look sloppy. So it's really important for us to make sure that when we sell product to people that we're fitting them properly. So we ask a lot of questions about fit, especially over the phone. The other thing is our cardigans, if you were to have bought a dress with that cardigan, it's exactly the same length as the cardigan.
Oh, yeah.
The dresses are the same length. And so we want to just build into our product the cool factor, right? So you match so you don't look sloppy. So because I don't want to look sloppy or mismatch. So we just try to build that in. And in terms of looking good, you know, the fact is we live in a sighted world. And many people are students, they have jobs, we're out in the community. And even though we can't see, the fact is sighted people are taking selfies of themselves every 5 minutes. They are very highly visual, right? So they can see us. And each of us as individuals has a personality and a certain type of music that we like and a certain type of food that we like. You know, everybody is like really individual and has individual ways to express ourselves. Within everyone in the world, one of those ways for millennia has been through what we wear. Mm-hmm. So there's not a reason, just because we lose our vision, not to be able to continue to use clothing or to utilize clothing for the first time to express who we are as individuals. And thinking that it's not important because we can't see it is just silly. That's just like thinking that it's, you know, if I have green stuff in my teeth, it's not important when I'm making a big presentation mm-hmm. to a client. I may not be able to see the green stuff, which is why I don't eat green stuff, but they can see it all. Yeah. They can see it. Yeah, exactly. So I feel like it's just, you know what? It's a huge part of self-expression. And I think it makes us feel better and more confident to feel good in our clothes and feel confident in our clothes. And it just makes our lives easier because automatically we have a built-in adversity, right? So let's mm-hmm. just make it easier.
Yeah. And I totally agree. Even though I'm sighted, I still feel like having clothes that fit well. You know, I have my favorite outfits. I have the things I wear if I'm doing an important presentation because I feel right. good and confident and know that I look, you know, good in that. And I think that's so true. There's that psychological aspect of what you wear. And yes, other people see it, but it's also for you, how it makes you feel.
Yeah. I think there is a kind of a reflection of the fact that we know that other people see it, mm-hmm. whether we see it or not. We know that members of our family or other people see it, and we want to feel, I always want to feel confident when I get dressed. And I just feel like, I think everybody wants to feel confident when they get dressed and make sure that they're not wearing something really dorky and they're uncertain of it, because who needs that kind of uncertainty?
Right. Well, and that kind of leads us into some of the practical things, for somebody who's lost their vision and they're trying to figure out now, you know, what to wear, what to buy, and just some of the practical things as people are going out, you know, shopping and looking for clothing that is comfortable for them, but also it fits well and suits their style. Do you have tips on selecting that and kind of developing your personal style? I think, you know, for younger mm-hmm. people, that's sort of a process of developing your style.
Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting because I get to go to, we went to 26 conventions last year, and it was really fantastic to see the wide range of apparel that people were wearing. And especially when the students are all come bustling in mm-hmm. and they'd all have like oversized t-shirts on and ripped up jeans and really cool, you know, sneaks on. And I think that there's a whole bunch of ways that we get this information. One is if we're a Star Trek fan and we say, wait, they make Star Trek t-shirts. Even if we can't see Star Trek, we want a Star Trek t-shirt.
Right.
And I think it kind of goes like that. And I get the opportunity to hear people talking. And myself, when somebody is trying to decide whether they want to get that sequin all over cardigan, it's not, there is zero technology involved except for one thing, an Apple phone, an iPhone. Mm-hmm. They ask me or somebody from my team, usually not me, to take a picture of them. And we usually take a picture from the front, the side, and the back mm-hmm. and send it to a trusted friend. 100% of the time, they're not using other technology. They're reaching out to somebody that they trust, that knows their wardrobe, that's their friend, mm-hmm. and asking them. And that, I think, is, it's not something that I invented. It's just something that I hear all the time. The other thing is, I also overhear people who are much more adventurous, who may go shopping with some friends, with salespeople. And it's kind of a great thing to hear about salespeople, because it's something I believe, and having been in retail. And that is that one lady at a convention just last week was saying, that salesperson said, if I buy that, they are not going to ring it at the register. And you know what? Because when we ask people for help and tell them what we want and what our desire is, they want to help us. They don't want to be the one that sends us out into the night with an uneven hem or draggy pants. You know, they want to feel proud that they helped us mm-hmm. and that we got into a garment that was comfortable and looked good for them. And they're trained to kind of say, well, you know what? Maybe that full zip with the two buttons, maybe let's try this pull on over here that's already in petite sizes. That'd be really easy to get on and we don't have to hem it. You know, they're mm-hmm. trained to do that. So I do hear that a lot of engaging going on with shopping.
Yeah.
And
those are the salespeople you want, right? You want the people that will tell you, well, I don't know, try this color or try this style. You know, this style might look better on you. Like I want to know. I don't want somebody just to tell me, oh, yeah, because they just want me to buy something. I want to, if I'm questioning, I really want to know this answer.
Exactly. And you know what? I've never actually worked for a company where we were ever taught to just upsell. Mm-hmm. We just walked away from sales or, you know, we tried to sell and to, you know, give them something different if they didn't have their size. But if we didn't, we would either order it or say, you know what? They may have it at American Eagle Outfitters. I just saw their display and maybe try those guys because mm-hmm. I think they may have a fit that you may prefer. That's much more likely that you'll encounter that because when you're working with somebody in a store, they know what's going on in every other store. It's their job mm-hmm. and they don't care. They'd rather have you be really happy and feel really good about yourself than have you be unhappy and not fit properly.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know, I think, because you might wonder sometimes if you're asking a salesperson if they say, oh, yes, that looks great on you, if it really does, or, you know, if it's just a sale. So that's good to know that sales professionals are actually trained to tell you the truth.
Accommodate us.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And make suggestions, but, you know, but to be helpful in that way.
Yes. Yes.
You know, in this day and age, it seems like there's an app for everything. Are there any kinds of apps or other things? I know you said mostly people just send a photo to a friend.
Yes. But you know what? I know it seems like I should be able to rattle off all these apps like Be My Eyes, you know, which is, you know, for me, more of a grocery store kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But no, really, it comes down to just a simple thing of asking a sighted person, or asking somebody that you trust what they think. And what I find, though, is that we ask really detailed questions. Is it between my knee and my ankles? Will you push it up against my leg? I want to feel how long it is. Mm. The shoulders feel kind of tight. Can you tell me what's going on up there? I find that as shoppers, we get very specific because, you know, the world is tactile to us. We depend on our ability to use our hands and our tactile senses in order mm-hmm. to move around the world. And so I have noted that we ask a lot more questions shopping than your normal run-of-the-mill sighted person who is going to do a quick visual rundown of a store. Mm-hmm. Well, we can't do that,
right?
So we have to ask questions or we have to feel a whole garment. I just find that we ask a lot more questions, which is really great because we want to make sure that it fits good, it feels good, we're comfortable in it. I would just say a couple of, you know, tip things is always before you buy something, find a chair and sit down in it.
That
How does
can be
it feel
very
at
important.
The waist? And you know, if you're whether you're a man or a woman, sometimes we have a midsection that's a little broader. And when we sit down, the buttons may pull on a men's shirt, okay, which would indicate that you need to have a different cut of shirt. mm-hmm. A more mature cut of shirt. And on a, for a woman, it may just bind us on our pants.
Right.
So that's the one thing I would say, if we're shopping like that on our own, to make sure that we raise our arms up and down, you know, do like a little calisthenics there, and make sure that we sit down. If we're putting on pants, if you're mobile, to squat and move in them as well, to make sure that there's no pulling or tugging anywhere before you walk out of the store. Because for us, it's a hassle to return stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So better to poke all the holes in everything before we ever walk out of the store.
Yeah, that's really good advice. What do you see for the future for Blind Girl Designs? What are your upcoming goals that you have?
Well, I just finished drawing a pumpkin today. So our initial thing is to get the pumpkin print out there and then draw our Christmas, our brand new Christmas product. And as we go forward, my big term goals are to be able to expand our product out into coffee mugs and other daily use things that I have so many requests that people are requesting for them to be tactile and using the designs that we do at Blind Girl Designs, which are mm-hmm. blind centric, as well as handbags. I've gotten a lot of requests for men's courier bags and handbags in leather. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at embossed leather for that. And what I'd really love to be able to do, but need to be able to do right now, we do our production in Houston, Texas for all of our dresses and cardigans, but I'd love to be able to expand our production into Asia to be big enough so that we can have more cardigans and more dresses and more matching apparel for, you know, regular length talls, petite plus, again, because we have a diverse community.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to be able, and I'd like to make sure that everything that we have, if we go to Asia production, then we can put rubberized dots on the back of garments that nobody can see, where we can identify the color of our garments.
Yeah.
So my goal is to make it be 100%, if we are totally blind, that we can identify the color and what garment that we have on, if it's from Blind Girl Designs. That's my overriding goal, is independence in dress.
That's awesome. And as I said, I love your designs. Everybody should go to blindgirldesigns.com. You can check it out for yourself. There's lots of things to choose from, whether it's hoodies or t-shirts, or so we were talking about cardigans and dresses that maybe don't have the 3D designs on them, but are very user-friendly in terms of being comfortable and easy to put on. So thank you, Tricia. It's been great just learning about a little bit about your journey. And I think for anybody who is interested in design and fashion, that's just a good thing to know, that just because you have some vision loss doesn't mean you can't be part of that industry, that there are ways to do
that's
it.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, ways to do that. And just the tips on fit and, you know, purchasing clothing that you'll like and be confident in wearing, whether it's, you know, for social gatherings or work functions. That's so helpful for our listeners. And I know you'll be joining us again for our next episode, and that is going to focus specifically on men's fashion and grooming tips. Again, kind of with that slant of the blind and low vision community. We will get to women's fashions, but we're so often talking about women's fashions and not as much about men's fashions. And I know some men are very fashion conscious and others perhaps not so much, but we'll be talking about that, and you'll give us some more tips there. So thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Sure. Well, thank you all for listening. As I said, explore Blind Girl Designs on their website and engage with us on social media and share out this episode if you've enjoyed it to all your friends on your social platforms. We hope you turn in and listen to the next episode of Navigating Life with Vision Loss. And we hope that all this great information is helping you to navigate your own life with vision loss.